Hi, I'm Vaya Skinner, Coordinator for Campus Communications, and welcome to HCC 360. Are you a student wanting more of an academic challenge? There's a program for that. It's the Honors Program. WHFC student volunteer Steele Feltz sat down to talk about the Honors Program with Professor Chris Jones, Coordinator for the Honors Program, and Dr. Tony Wohlers, Dean of Behavioral and Social Sciences. Let's dive in.
First, could you tell us who you are and what you do here at HCC?
Thank you. My name is Tony Wohlers, and I am Dean of the Behavioral and Social Sciences Division, and I'm also, together with Chris Jones, overseeing the Honors Program.
Chris Jones, Mathematics Faculty, Harvard Community College, obviously, and I also, in tandem with Tony, I'm also the coordinator of the Honors Program as well.
Awesome. What does the coordinator do?
Oh, boy. Whatever Tony tells me. No. No, realistically, the coordinator is somebody that tries to keep a pulse with the students, but also tries to do some of the day-to-day operations, curriculum building, that sort of thing. So Tony and I really work well in tandem to bounce ideas off of one another. And there really isn't too much difference between what I do and Tony does, except for the fact that I have dedicated time to be able to talk to students, be able to get in touch with them, those sort of stuff. And Tony runs a division to where he's got time to talk to students. He gets a lot more complaints than I do. Tony just basically mops up everything that I do wrong. And that might be a better way to kind of describe it.
No, I just let me add to this. So Chris, his role is really critical maintaining the operation of the program, but at the same time also really maintaining and strengthening the vision of the Honors Program. And that's where Chris and I often have really good conversations, not just the two of us, but also with students and with the Honors faculty, you know, to really move the Honors Program forward, build the foundation, as we always say, for student success. And Chris is absolutely critical in that role. Without Chris, the Honors Program would not function.
And I paid him to say that. And in all seriousness, another thing that the coordinator does is outreach as well to both current students as well as prospective students, not just in the high schools, but also students at other institutions as well. We have a National Collegiate Honors Council and we have a Maryland Collegiate Honors Council, and I'm part of both, to where we try to make sure that our students are in touch with the other students as well as the other institutions for transfer opportunities, as well as other opportunities to be able to present research or to investigate research or collaboration with other students.
And in that sense, Chris, the other really important role that is kind of related to this is he's also mentoring a lot of students in the Honors Program. So if they need help with, let's say, with research, Chris is there to help. If they need help as far as, you know, what kind of classes they should take in the Honors Program, right? Mm-hmm. Chris is there to help with that. Or kind of any other question, you know, if you think about the impact of the Honors Program, explaining that to a new student, you know, and in that way also providing that mentorship. Chris is doing that as well. So as you said, Chris, maintaining that connection with the students, you know, and helping them is really, again, very critical for the success of the Honors Program.
All right, so we're going to get into talking about the Honors Program. So first, what is the Honors
Program? To me, the Honors Program is the Honors Students, because without the Honors Students, there really can't be an Honors Program. The Honors Program gives the students an opportunity to both grow, but also to refine skills that they already have. And the Honors Program kind of encompasses a lot of different sorts of ideas, big ideas that we have at the college already, and kind of unifies those and gives those opportunities to students. So, for instance, students are given a global perspective in all classes. But within the Honors Program, we try to tie that into our different sorts of ideas with respect to service learning as a global perspective. So what opportunities can students give back to the community, or not only give back to the community, but learn at the same time? There really is a difference to me between community service and service learning. To me, community service is just doing a job for the community, but not really learning too much about why you're doing it. So, for instance, you pick up trash on the side of a road on Saturday, and that's great. There's absolutely a lot of merit in doing that. But then how does that benefit our society? How does it benefit ecologically? How does it benefit monetarily for our society as well? And those are the sorts of things that we like to do within the honors program, is to make sure our students have a deeper level of learning. For instance, if you go into a regular psychology class, you might learn about Gestalt and you might learn about grouping principles. Oh, you like that? Yeah. I actually paid attention.
Gestalt and Zeitgeist.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And you might learn about those things at a surface level. But in the honors program, if you took a course, you might do some research about that and you might do some presentation about that. So you gain those transferable skills, as I like to call them. Transferable skills meaning that no matter what your major is, no matter what discipline you're in, you're going to use those skills for the rest of your life. So presentation, no matter what skill, no matter what job you're going to do, you have to be a presenter. You have to be able to communicate with people. You have to make sure that what you're saying comes across effectively and concisely. Otherwise, you're going to lose people. And those are the sorts of things that are transferable to me. Being able to do research. A lot of our honor students, they're not going to stop with a bachelor's degree. They're going to go for a master's degree or a PhD. They have to be able to do research and different types of research, firsthand, secondhand, thirdhand, citation, getting those sorts of skills to be able to write effectively and communicate. So those are some of the academic things that we talk about with the honors program. But there's also the collaboration, I think, within the honors students. And being able to give those students a network to be able to reach out to, with peers, with faculty, with staff, folks that understand that honor students want to be challenged, but also need to be nurtured as well. You know, we get a lot of students that have the caliber to do higher level work, but they're still students, they're still learning. You know, in the honors program, we give those students the academic rigor to really achieve those, but also the guidance and nurturing, so that way they're still learning as they go through that. And Tony, I'm sure I left out a couple hundred things, but that's why you have the doctor in front of your name.
Right, yes, that doctor title.
Yeah.
What did I get? Anyway. No, Chris, I think you summarized it really, really well. The only thing I would add is, in addition to providing that really rich intellectual environment for our honor students, you know, that's really where they can go in depth about a subject matter. They are really passionate about it, right? And they can take that and they can say, hey, let me do some research about this, right? And then they write a paper, present things like that. Or they may be passionate, as Chris talked about service learning, right? Learning about the project in that way too, but also then giving back to the community. The other thing that also happens in the honors program a lot, and that is the opportunity for students to not only identify leadership positions, but also be leaders. They can really practice those leadership skills. Because the honors program, you know, we have, for instance, various committees, like the Honor Student Society, which we'll talk a little bit about later. But we also have other committees, college-wide, where honor students have been on, right, contributing their ideas, their suggestions, their thoughts, you know, to make the college, to make specific programs better. And those are also, as Chris pointed out, those are also part of these transferable skills, right? These leadership skills, they are transferable. So they can apply them later on if they decide to go to graduate school, right? And many of our honors program, that's what they want to do, right? If you ask them, hey, what do you want to do in the future? They will tell you, I want to go to graduate school. I want to get a PhD, right? And then they are thinking about their professional life as well, beyond that even sometimes, right? And all those skills you get here at a community college, you can transfer those skills as you go on to graduate school and as you join, you know, the workforce later on and thus be successful. And that's all we want. We want them to be successful here and beyond.
When the students succeed, we succeed.
So how did the program come about?
Good question. The program's been around for more than 20 years. Back in 2001, as an initiative that was created by a number of deans as well as faculty, the honors program kind of started out with the idea that we did have students at a community college that had academic needs that extended beyond the curriculum that we offered. And so we wanted to offer those students the experiential opportunities to be able to grow to at what the level they were at. So initially, the courses started out as you would take a course. Also, along with that course, there would be an honors component to it. For instance, one of the earliest ones that we had, I believe, was in a biology course where a student partnered with Longwood Gardens. So essentially what they did, their job was to make sure that the pool areas were clean, but they also did an investigation as to what was necessary to keep those clean and the biology that that encompassed that. So it was almost the ecology of that. And they did some research on that, and then they did a presentation of that. And that's just one example of some of the earliest work. And so from that kind of grew the idea that we need to make designated sections just for that type, where we had more students that were enrolling in those sections. So we had that natural evolution towards that. And it hasn't always been good times for the honors program. In fact, probably about maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, the honors program lost a lot of student enrollment. And so we were basically down to a class or two. And fortunately for us, we were able to revitalize it. The faculty, as well as the administration, supported the students to be able to basically get it back on its legs. And the good news is now, not only do we just offer the classes, because that's initially what it was just a bunch of classes, but we have a lot more support structures in place for our students. We have opportunities for our students and faculty to get engaged in leadership as well. I think there really is a difference between having honors courses and an honors program. And the program is sort of that support structure for our students, and it governs all of the different types of policies and also the different opportunities, and gives our students those opportunities for mentorship, service learning, global learning, those sorts of things.
Is there separate honors classes, or is it augmentations to existing courses?
Yes. So, and I mean that because the large majority of the courses are honors courses, and they're designated sections. And so, for instance, if you took the Honors English 101, there's a section of Honors English 101 under all the regular English 101 classes, but the students would have to be in the Honors program to enroll in those. On occasion, and it generally happens towards the end of a student's academic career at Harvard, they run out of Honors classes to take. There's only so much room in our curriculum for students to be able to graduate. And so what we can do is we can kind of augment a class, as you said, and we kind of, as Tony likes to say, we honorize the class. And we take a general section, and the student would be enrolled in that general section, but there would be some enriched learning added into the course. So, for example, a research project, teaching a lesson that goes within the course. We've done that several times for our education majors, doing a service learning project, even being able to just give back to Harvard in general by utilizing their skills within the context of that course. There's a lot of flexibility, I think, for students to be able to tailor the courses towards their strengths as well.
And let me add some statistics that kind of relate to how the Honors Program came about and how it has evolved. So if you're looking at just some basic stats here, so since academic year 2016, the Honors Program enrollment has more than doubled from 115 to 240. If you're looking at spring 2015 enrollment in Honors classes, that one has increased from that point from 24 to spring 2022 to 96. And then if you're looking at, let's say, fall 2015 until fall 2021, we have increased from 60 to 117. And here's a really, really important number that also shows kind of the growth of the Honors Program. And that is if you're looking at graduation. How many have graduated from the Honors Program? So that has increased from in 2016 from 3 to last year, spring 2021, 28. So again, it shows you the Honors Program has come a long way, and it has its champions. Chris, one of them for sure, right? That has helped the Honors Program grow that dramatically. And if I were to throw in some statistics, statistically significant.
So you mentioned enrollment increasing. Does the program actively recruit students?
Yes, and through a number of ways. So one of which is through open houses. Whenever the college has a general open house, we try to have both a student as well as an employee representative there to kind of talk up to the prospective honor students, as well as the parents, to talk about what the honors program is, what the benefits are for the students as well. And we also do outreach within the college. So we hold information sessions quite frequently for students. You know, sometimes we'll just have a table at the student center and students will pass by and we'll just have some literature. Said, hey, you ever think about the honors program? Here's a little bit of information. Certainly on the website, there's a lot of information. So students can apply on the website if they'd like to. And I'm trying to think of some of the other ways that we try to promote. Certainly admissions does an awesome job whenever they go out to the high schools and try to recruit, there's a section about the honors program to where they talk about to incoming seniors or prospective seniors that are coming into Harford. Can you think of any other ways that we do promotion, Tony, off the top of your head?
You mentioned already the letters that go out, right?
I did not. No. We do send letters to students that qualify for the honors program each semester. So if a student in their first semester, they qualify for the honors program, we just automatically send them a letter. We give them a phone call for some of the students. We'll send them an email. We'll tie two cans to a string. We'll go to their house and stand outside their house and knock at 3 a.m. We tunnel underneath sometimes their place of employment. So, wait, one of those is not true. I can't remember which one. But in all seriousness, though, we do try our best to make sure the students are told that the honors program exists. And there's a lot of students that probably don't know that a radio station on campus exists. And it's just being able to communicate those things to our students and give them those opportunities to get engaged with the various sorts of initiatives at the campus.
Could you please tell the honor students about the radio station?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. In fact, when we used to do a face-to-face orientation, mm-hmm. we had honor students come into the radio station just to see what it was all about. Now, the last time we've had a face-to-face orientation was 2018, so it's been a number of years since we've done that. But we used to do a campus tour, and the last stop was the radio station. Not surprisingly, it was one of their favorite places to go to. My math office was not one of their favorite places for some reason. Can't understand why.
Yeah. And you know what? Thinking about this is a really good follow-up question there. You know, as we were talking about honor students pursuing different kind of projects in their classes, right?
We have communication majors.
Yep. Right? Absolutely. Lots of them.
Right. So, you know, there's a clear link where we can have an honor student, you know, have a project directly linked to the radio station. And that can be disseminated. For instance, it could be disseminated through the Scholar Summit, which we'll talk about, right? It could be a research project in a mm-hmm. sense as well, you know? So there are different avenues that we definitely can pursue that. One more thing I want to add as far as recruitment, in addition to all the many things that Chris pointed out, we have it also formalized. We have a recruitment plan. It is a written document that guides our actions and our strategies to constantly recruit and sustain the recruitment, because recruitment is critical for the honors program, right, to keep it going.
So how have students in the past responded to the honors program?
We just recently had the National Collegiate Honors Council site visit. The National Collegiate Honors Council is kind of the umbrella organization for honors programs for the country. And they do provide guidelines, best practices, they call it, right, for honors programs to be established, maintained, and grow. And they were here last week, well, almost 2 weeks. Anyway, so as part of that site visit, we also talked to students, especially alumni students. And those were students that experienced the honors programs, let's say, in different eras. So we had one student there who talked about the honors program. She thinks she was here in 2012 or 2013, mm-hmm. then 15, 16, and then some more recent former honors students. The constant theme was how much they learned from taking the honors classes, the skill sets they obtained from those honors classes, and how they are still able, and that goes back to the point we've been making earlier, how they are still able to use those skills they have learned in the honors program and apply them. Again, transferable skills, you know. They also talked about the great, great faculty in the honors program. And in fact, Chris Jones, he was a constant theme. They all took his math class, or maybe another one of your classes, Chris. And they said, you know, Chris is just an outstanding faculty. And, you know, this is so critical, that outstanding faculty, you know, because that outstanding faculty is able to make relationships with the students. Those relationships are so critical. And Chris and many others in the honors program who are teaching, they have that talent to make those relationships, because those relationships will then build the foundation for the students to be successful, right? So again, that was another comment that was constant, a constant theme from the students, from the alumni who were talking about the honors program. They also talked about, you know, and Chris pointed that out as well, just that ability to network with other honors students to build that kind of cohort, to build that sense of belonging, right? To build those long-lasting friendships, you know? And then the more recent former honor students, they talked a lot also about the research opportunities they had, you know, where they were able to present papers at the Scholar Summit or the Maryland Collegiate Honors Council and at other venues, right? Where they really attended a professional conference presenting papers, presenting posters, or presenting any sort of other scholarly project, basically, right? To their peers, to faculty, right? Getting feedback about their projects and then take that and then improve upon those projects and then take it to another kind of conference, let's say. Or it might be, God knows, it might be the foundation for when they go to graduate school, right? For their master's, because you have to write, do a master thesis. Maybe it will feed into a PhD, God knows, right? But all those seeds, they are planted during the honors program, and the faculty, the outstanding faculty, they do have a critical part of this, and that was a constant theme from the students.
And I really just think, backing up what Tony said, it's the opportunity. It really is all the opportunities that the honors program offers to students that really has that resounding effect. And I think that's just an extension of the college in general. We talk about, you know, the honors program offers this, the honors program offers that. But realistically, without the students and Harford's support, the honors program couldn't exist. I think the resounding impression from our honors students is going to be a positive one, to give them those skills that are going to last with them no matter what job they do, no matter what experience they have with other people. Some of the friendships that the students make with each other are lifelong. And I can attest to that because I have cohorts of students that I always ask them, how's so-and-so doing? Because, you know, they all work together, especially in some of our honor student councils. And they'll let me know that that person's going on to get into a doctorate program, or they're working for somebody in a biological manufacturing plant. And so they just have outstanding careers. I should ask them what I can do on the side. So, but realistically, you know, those are the things that we get from the honors program is those alumni. And we're hoping that ultimately those alumni will come back to Harford and either teach or mentor our students in some capacity, just because, you know, they've had the experiences and they can try to tell those students what to do in the future to be successful.
Could you tell us a little bit about the HSC and the community that students have formed around the program?
Oh, yeah. So HSC, Honors Student Council. The Honors Student Council is the students telling us what they want about the honors, or what they want from the honors program, excuse me. So now they can't tell us, you know, that they want an A in all their classes. Well, they can tell us they want an A, but we're not going to give them an A in every class unless they earn it. But they tell us what courses that they'd like to see in the honors program. They'd like to see what events they'd like to see, not just on campus, but off campus. One of the things that I've seen is that the students have built a number of courses, such as our music class that we offer, biology class that we offer, economics class that we offer. And that comes through our honors student council, that we have a student that says, you know, this might be a good course for the honors program. Consider it. And they relay that information to Tony and I. And then we take it back to the faculty and say, what do you guys think? And the faculty will say, well, we're supportive, or we need these sorts of structures to be in place before we can implement something like that. It's leadership opportunities for students. It's students that need some sort of leadership within either the college or outside the college, because maybe they're looking to transfer to a competitive university or get a competitive job. It offers those students that opportunity to be able to work with other students as well, to collaborate, which is a skill that's absolutely critical no matter what job you're going to go in. And honestly, the honor student faculty, or the honor student council, excuse me, just kind of works with the faculty, the administration. It's just a delight to work with them, honestly, because those are the students that they're in the honors program and they serve as advocates for their peers. And they obviously, like, another thing that they do is they have these events that we have on campus. So we go to play, like, for instance, we're going to New York City in May. We're having a quiz bowl, which we do every year. So we have a bunch of people that answer Jeopardy-like questions. I always make them up, and they're always too easy, I think, just because, well, I don't know. Maybe I need to start making them harder when people get like 18 out of 20 of them right, and I think they're hard. So, or maybe they just watch Jeopardy too much, one of the two. So, but regardless, but the students come up with those events, and they tell us what they want, and then Tony and I try our best to make it a reality. But again, they just serve as that liaison between the general student population and just letting us know what they want out of that.
And the other thing they do is they do the newsletter. academic year. Really, really important too. So in that newsletter, right, they talk about the honors program, what's been happening in the honors program, like, for instance, these events. They do also usually interview a faculty, right?
Yep.
A faculty, right? Mm-hmm. Talk about something that relates, obviously, to the honors program. So they're really involved in a wide range of things. And the other interface that I think is also important, and Chris, you mentioned it, is that the Honors Student Council interfaces with the Faculty Honors Advisory Board, because a representative from the Honors Student Council is on the Faculty Honors Advisory Board, right? So here, that two-way communication is kind of in place, right? You can bring ideas back and forth, right? And then there's a concern, obviously, you can address that way. If there are new great ideas, you can get it addressed at that way as well, right? So it's just another dynamic vehicle that helps us to push the honors program forward, right? And always stay connected to both the students and the faculty, right? They kind of work in tandem here in a sense and give the students really that voice, right? As you pointed out, Chris, that voice that they get that sense you really have the ability to shape the honors program.
Awesome. So you mentioned earlier that there's outstanding faculty in the program. Does the program have a steady faculty, or does it rotate?
We do have opportunities for any faculty member that wants to get engaged at some level. We do have a lot of faculty that have taught the courses for a number of years. And generally, they're senior-level faculty, but we do have faculty that are newer to Harvard that do teach the classes. So I think we have a good mix of that. Which is good, because we certainly want to make sure that we give faculty opportunities to teach the courses. But there are probably a good cohort of about a dozen to maybe 15 faculty members that regularly teach the honors courses. That doesn't mean necessarily like they have a stranglehold on those courses. So for instance, next spring, we're offering a psychology course. I think it's human development across the lifespan. And it's going to be taught by a faculty that hasn't taught an honors course at Harvard. And that's just basically because they wanted to teach a course. We had opportunity for growth within the honors program curriculum. And certainly all faculty are qualified to do it. But she wanted to step up and do it. So we do have that opportunity for faculty as well. So it's one of those things to where we want to make sure all faculty have an opportunity that would like to be able to teach a course. Sometimes we just can't. There are some programs where, you know, if the enrollment isn't as high, we have to make sure that it's open to all students. And we do have to make sure it garners significant enrollment. So if we only get two or three students, that might be better served as an individual sort of honorized course in some respects, if we can justify that as well.
Just one funny that kind of came from the side visit, which is, and I think I told you already, Chris, but it's worth sharing again. So when we had the former honor students, right, experience the honors program back in 2013, even 12, I think it was, right? And they were talking about the faculty teaching these honors classes. Of course, as I said, Chris came up all the time. But they also brought other names up, and they asked. So we asked them basically, that's what we asked. So who would you suggest also should teach honors courses? They came up with a number of names.
Regina, Ruth Ray,
Jackie Madden, Sharon Stowers. I'm forgetting one. The funny thing is, they are all teaching honors courses now. Those are the suggestions they had, you know, even before they taught honors courses, right? So, again, really interesting, right? Which again, makes this point that faculty can really, really leave an impression on the students, right? You know, maybe in 10 years, 15 years, when you think back about HCC, and then you think, oh, who really made an impression on me? It just happens, maybe it happens more often with honors courses.
Could.
Right. Which makes sense.
It's definitely cool, like the faculty student relationships and how important it is. So we're going to go talk about the goals of the honor program. So the goals of the honors program on the website say it is service learning and global engagement. Do these goals change from year to year?
I would think so. Those are the ones that are the external goals, because those are more the mission of the honors program. We always want to try to make the honors program grow in some respect. Obviously, complacency is, you know, something to where that's not going to help students. We always want to make sure that we offer the best for our students. So we do have goals that are both internal and external. And so, for instance, research has been one of the goals that we've looked at for a number of years at Harvard recently within the honors program, because those are the skills that are going to last for students when they're done at Harvard. So we do have goals to be able to expand research, to expand the visibility of the honors program as well. It's certainly something that you wouldn't want to put on your website, that we want to make the honors program bigger. We want to make the honors program more visible. But internally, we truly care about that, and we truly value that. And the students do too, through word of mouth, et cetera. What's really shown to the community is more the mission and the vision as to what the honors program is. And then we have goals to be able to really hit what that mission and vision is going to be ultimately for the honors program. It's a process. And it's a difficult process, because no matter how well you do, there's always a next level. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that we're finding with the honors program is, you know, we've hit this really high level of achievement, and now we want to break through to the next level with respect to our students. So what can we do next to serve our students, both inside and outside the classroom as well?
So we're going to talk about the Scholar Summit now. First off, what is the Scholar Summit?
The Scholar Summit. So the Scholar Summit directly relates to one of the goals we have in the Honors Program, and that is the promotion of undergraduate research. So undergraduate research is one of those what we call high impact learning strategies, because it allows you to really extract, again, those skill sets that you need. If you do a kind of a traditional way of thinking about research, collect data, analyze data, right, and present the data, right? So it goes through these very kind of basic critical thinking steps, right? And as we all know, right, critical thinking is a really important skill to have. Employees, regardless of who you're asking, they're looking for that skill. So going back to the Scholar Summit, it's kind of just the context. The Scholar Summit, the idea is to bring together students from all disciplines, So we talk about the social sciences, we talk about the hard sciences or STEM, we're talking about the humanities, right? To come together and share the scholarly projects, which can range widely, right? We can have a topic that focuses on a experiment in a lab. On the other kind of side, we could have a scholarly project that focuses on a piece of literature, a poem, a sculpture, right? Or it could be a project that focuses on, I don't know, things like, you know, the political behavior during election time, right? A good traditional social science topic in that sense, right? So the Scholar Summit, students come together, they present a scholarly project, usually through a poster, but they can be also on a panel, right, where they talk about the project. And then what happens, and that is critical. So the presentation is one part, right, where you have to convey your ideas as succinctly as possible, right, make your major points. But then the audience, other students or faculty, have the opportunity to ask questions about the research project or the scholarly project, right? And in that way, you kind of build this engagement with the student or the researcher, whatever you want to call it, right, about the project. And it gives the student the opportunity to think about, I don't know, think about this. This is really good. This is a way for me to expand the research project, maybe go in another direction, maybe refine it, whatever it will be, right? But it's that opportunity that will allow the students to grow even further, right? Because you're learning, you're in the midst of literally learning from the engagement you have with the person who is asking those sometimes really, really tough questions, right? Which is another skill, right? If you think about then, if you go on later and you go, you know, let's say you're faculty, you go to conferences all the time to present your projects, right? You get some people who ask very tough questions, and sometimes not very diplomatically, by the way. Right, but that scholarly summit, in a sense, that scholar summit prepares you a little bit for that too, right? It kind of helps you to build this kind of shield, right? To kind of just so you can, it just bounces off, right? Okay, here's my answer, right? Let's move on. Anyway, it's another kind of really good skill that is built for the scholar summit. So The Scholar Summit this year, it's the second one, will bring together Harvard Community College students from all disciplines, but it will also bring to campus students from CSU College. We have this partnership with them, and they're doing the same thing. They're recruiting students to come up with a research project and then come to campus on May 24th to present the scholarly the project. So it's a great, great event for students to experience a professional conference, you know, and it's you with your peers. And you just talk about your project, you're relaxed, right? And you take that experience to grow. So that's kind of what the Scholar Summit is basically. Did I miss something, Chris?
I don't think you missed anything about, you know, the context of it, but when is it, Tony?
Oh, when is it? Yeah. So May 24th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. But if you go to go.harvard.edu/Scholar Summit 2022, you get to the website that is designated for the Scholar Summit. You get a basic overview of what it is. And more importantly, there is a portal where you can submit the abstract. And you will also find the contact information there too. Ann Sugars, she's a faculty in economics. She is actually coordinating the Scholar Summit. And by the way, there's a steering committee. And guess who's on the steering committee? Two students.
I just doubled our output.
That's right.
Not two students. Math, but, you know.
Again, talking about opportunities for students to have their voice in a really important event, right? This is the second one, as I said, the second Scholar Summit. Last year's Scholar Summit, and I know you have the question on there too, was a good start. We had a pretty good turnout as far as presentations, very diverse presentations,
yeah, absolutely.
But all of them outstanding. And they were so good that they all got awards, mm-hmm. right? So we do have awards, right, for best papers, best presentation, things like that. Those are monetary awards. Monetary awards, let me emphasize that. We are going to do the same thing again this year around with the awards. And that's something else. It's not just the money, guys. It's, of course, also about it's what you really get out of it, right, mm-hmm. From that experience. And, of course, you can also put that experience on your resume, right, building your resume. Once you think about graduate school, especially those competitive ones, right? If you want to impress them, that's one way to impress them. Because just think about it. How many undergraduate students go to a professional conference to present a scholarly project?
Could you give some examples of past submissions that really stand out?
One that I remember was the impact of animal-assisted therapy. Veterans who have experienced PTSD symptoms, and that was done by Olivia Brokowski Johnson.
And if I may,
please.
That one was actually accepted as well at the Maryland mm-hmm. Collegiate Honors Council for presentation. So one of the awesome things about the Scholar Summit is mm-hmm. that students have the opportunity to refine skills to be able to present at a statewide statewide presentation. And again, they have the opportunity to win prizes, but also just to put on their resume that they presented at a statewide conference. And as Tony said before, the proportion of students at a community college that have that opportunity, pretty small. At a university, maybe a little bit larger, especially for undergraduate, but at a two-year institution, being able to do research and present that research, those opportunities don't come along every day.
Another great presentation was focused on increasing the federal minimum wage in the United States can result in economic disaster. And that was done by Maida Ahmed. Another great presentation. We also had one about the history of the science behind memory, right? So psychology. And child poverty, causes, effects, and prevention. That was Lindsay Donovan presented, right?
Mm-hmm.
And another one, progressive income taxation in the United States by Ryan Perry. Again, all these presentations were outstanding, simply outstanding. And you know, they could have competed with anybody else on this planet as far as the quality of those yeah. presentations.
Just one more question about the summit. How do you sign up for the summit?
There's a website. If you go to harvard.edu and you go in the search bar and just search Scholar Summit, there's just an online form that you can complete and register for it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody that's at the institution to be part of the audience. We invite anybody from the community, from Harford Community College or from Harford County, to just sit there and showcase what the students are able to do. As part of the Scholar Summit, we have alumni from the Honors Program as well as from Harford Community College that are going to talk about research. And they're going to talk about how they've used it either in their future studies or in their current careers as well. So it's that cycle of where students go through Harford, they get that experience outside of Harford, and they just come back to kind of nurture our students a little bit more. So, and I know that's not necessarily mutually exclusive to the Honors Program as well as the Scholar Summit, but it sort of embodies as to the overarching goals of Harford is that lifelong learning and the ability to just give back the service learning.
So what are some of the requirements for the Honors Program for HCC-enrolled students and transfer?
So let's say you're a student that's just coming to Harford Community College. You have to have a 3.2 cumulative unweighted GPA from high school. And if you have that, then you're automatically, we'll put you in the Honors Program, we'll get you signed up for courses, all that good stuff. Or you could have a 1,200 SAT score as well. So let's say, for instance, you were taking difficult classes in high school, and sometimes, you know, you take something like a calculus class or a chemistry class or an AP English class, and maybe you get like a B minus or a B in that class, and it weights you down to like a 3.15. We certainly don't want to preclude those students from having the opportunity, but they're curious. Those are the students that we want to get into the Honors Program as well. If you're a student at Harford, if you have a 3.2 GPA then and 9 credits, then we'll sign you into the Honors Program. Sometimes by teacher recommendation, we'll sign you into the Honors Program as well. Another opportunity is that if you go through and you want to take one of our honors courses, but you don't quite have the GPA, but you know you've shown success in that field. And so maybe you're taking courses that are outside the field that bump you down to like a 3 or a 2.9 or something like that, but you're really strong in liberal arts or you're really strong in science. Then we get you into that honors course and you can take it at an advanced level. And maybe those are the courses that bump you up into the GPA to be able to get you into the honors program. But lots of ways that we try to get students into the honors program. Again, we don't want to make it exclusive to students. We want to make it so that students can aspire to get into the honors program. And not the necessarily students that have had the most successful high school careers, because one of the great things about Harford to me is it's an opportunity to reinvent yourself. And so if you didn't do too well in high school, but you want to kind of, you know, remake your story, that first semester after Harford, you can jump right into the honors program if you get 2 B's and an A. And I think it's an awesome opportunity for students.
So what is the criteria for completion?
A student has to take 9 credits of honors courses, and they have to have a 3.2 GPA or better in those honors courses. So 2 B's and an A. They also have to have a 3.2 overall GPA to complete the honors program, and they have to complete their degree. So, you know, whatever the requirements are for your engineering program, for your English program, for your psychology program, you have to do that as well to complete the honors program, since the mission and values of the honors program are directly tied to those of the college. So, again, those are not mutually exclusive. We want to make sure that our students meet those goals.
Is there any scholarship opportunities for new and transfer students?
Yes, yes, yes. That's one of the greatest things about being in the honors program. Is there's lots of money for students to be awarded both while they're at Harford, but also for transfer. And I'll start internally. Harford has a robust number of scholarships that we offer. And generally, students that are by merit-based are those that are going to be chosen first. But we do have scholarships that are exclusive to the Honors Program. And one of the best ones is the Honors Program Scholarship, where if a student earns an A or a B in an honors course, we'll pay for the tuition for their next honors course, and we'll do that for up to 2 courses. And since you only need 3 courses, basically 2/3, I think that's right, 2 out of 3, 2/3. But I think...
You had a math one.
Oh, boy, that's scary. But that would be the qualification to where a student only pays for 1 out of the 3 classes to complete the honors program. It's just encouragement for our students to be able to do that as well. Other opportunities for transfer. We have a number of articulations with universities in the surrounding area for students to get automatic scholarship money. One of the most popular is the Towson University's Honors College. They have a fantastic Honors College. They did not pay me to say that, by the way, but they really do. If a student earns a 3.5 GPA at Harford and completes our Honors Program, they're automatically accepted into the Towson University Honors College. they're also given $1,250 per academic year, up to 2 years. And that's on top of any other sort of scholarship monies that they're awarded. We have articulations with UMBC, where UMBC will give a student $4,500 if they have a 3.7 GPA or higher. And again, automatic admission into their honors college on top of any other scholarships. One of the most recent we have is with Salisbury University, and Salisbury has another fantastic honors college. If a student gets a 3.5 GPA or better, I think it's 3.5 or is it 3.7? Sorry, I'm doing these from memory, so I'll have to check it. But if they earn that minimum GPA, they're automatically accepted. They get preferential housing. They also get $1,000 per semester, or I'm sorry, per academic year. And they also have access to the honors facilities as well as that campus. So really awesome opportunities. And they do one of the most important things that I neglected to mention. All these institutions will take all of our honors courses and apply it towards their graduation as well. I mean, that in itself is really awesome that a student that's coming directly out of high school might have to take 24 honors credits, but a student earns 9 credits here, so they're applied to when they transfer automatically. So it's a great opportunity for students to get their associate's degree, to complete the honors program at Harvard, but then to get merits for those when they transfer to another institution.
Where can people find more information and contact?
Go to harvard.edu. In the search bar, just type in honors program, and it will take you right to our honors program page to learn more information. I encourage prospective students or parents of prospective students to email me, cjones@harvard.edu. Just email me. I'll send a slew of information. If they want to talk to me, either via Zoom or via phone, happy to talk with students. Come to our open houses. I think that those are probably the best way to learn about not just the honors program, but the college in general. Make a campus visit. Set up an appointment with a faculty member within the division that you're interested in and have them stop by my office. So, for instance, if they're interested in sociology, maybe they contact Sharon Stowers, who's one of our fantastic sociology instructors. And while Sharon's giving them a little tour, they stop by my office and say, "Hey, Chris, this is Jane Doe. And Jane's really interested in the honors program at Harvard. Can you talk to her for about 5 minutes?" I'm ecstatic to do that sort of thing. We might even stop by Tony's office, too. So,
yeah, always welcome.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Tony has food, though, too.
Food and drinks, refreshments. Yep. Yeah. And by the way, on that website, when you go there, you will also find a online submission form. Very easy to complete. You think you meet the criteria to join the honors program? You can complete that too right away, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it will come actually to person myself.
Is there anything else you guys want to mention that I didn't cover in the questions?
It's a great program. Take advantage of the opportunities that the honors program offers. I cannot stress that enough. You know, our honors program, I keep saying that, but I'm convinced of it, is one of the best in the state.
And the only thing I'd like to add is gratitude. Gratitude for the administrators, gratitude to the students that comprise the honors program, gratitude to the staff. We can't get in honors students without the staff at Harvard Community College. Our staff is fantastic, by the way. Financial aid, registration, those sorts of folks that really don't get enough praise for what they do. I work directly with the staff side, and I could name 3 or 4 people that without those folks, the honors program wouldn't exist. And then also gratitude to the instructors. Without the faculty members, to be able to challenge the students that are masters of their craft, if you would, to really give those students the opportunity to be more successful.
And the college leadership who stands firmly behind the honors program success.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Theo.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Let's do this again.
Yeah.
That's all for today. In case you missed the contact information, here it is again. Information about the Honors Program can be found on the HCC website. Enter Honors Program in the search bar or just click the Academics tab and look for the Honors Program block. You can also email cjones@harford.edu. Special thanks go to Steele Feltz for conducting the interview and to our editors, Zachary Cloyd and Selah Edwards. There's an extended version of this interview on our podcast, HCC 360. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Vaya Skinner, and HCC 360 will be back next month with another deep dive into amazing opportunities at Harvard Community College. Thanks for listening.